Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hamid, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of Critical Issues, where we look at the issues of today and look at the solutions to these issues. And, you know, we have many, many issues of today. Today is a very interesting one, and take a little thought in it. To be popular or smart? And I think this was one of the questions of a book that was by Dr. Kwanzaa Jufu. And today I believe I've read that book. But the question is, do you want to be popular or do you want to be smart? And those are the thoughts that we're going to be going into. We're going to bring Dr. Jamal Rashid in and get the subject on. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Rashid.
Well, they can listen, but anyway. Hold on for one quick second.
Rahim. I should do in La Ilaha Illallah, once who last Sharika Lai.
I should do in the Muhammadan after who Baba Sulu. brothers and sisters in the American Muslim 360 Block Radio listening audience. With peace of peace. Assalamu alaikum. You know, peer pressure is not something new. Not only is it a common enemy amongst our youth, but it was a common enemy amongst us during our youth, during our early days. And that's not the beginning. Conflict between one group or another. Okay, my call had dropped. I was having trouble with this phone. So sorry about that. But we can go back into history. Our African history. And you will see divisions back then. And so that's not something new to be popularity, the in crowd. There's always been a common enemy from within. I can recall the Django, the two outstanding actors, Jamie Foxx and Samuel Jackson. If you can recall Samuel Jackson, how he looked, Jamie Foxx riding on a horse. It was a spectacular acting job as far as his dismay or dislike or his bitterness riding in what was not a norm, riding on a horse, to the point that Samuel Jackson became outrageously angry. And threatened Jamie Foxx, "I'll snatch you off that horse. You don't get off that horse." That's just how outraged the norm was as far as business of one group or one norm versus another. In Samuel Jackson's mind, that was totally out of place, abnormal, if you can recall that scene. Of course, it didn't start in the United States. Now, we were programmed to be divided. It was a common training to divide and conquer. to divide, and so does popularity. Or to be smart when it came to the school days. The beginning started way back some 400 years or more ago. Constant division of the actual Woolly Lynch plan. But believe it or not, that was part of the plan within the Woolly Lynch. The psychological scheme. And when we say scheme, that's one of Satan's schemes, to divide and conquer. Or united we stand, divided we fall. So when we fast forward to our community today, we're speaking of us as Muslims, who are supposed to know better. But when you know better, you do better. But we still have division. Still have the Samuel Jackson and the Jamie Foxes right here in our community as I speak. It's an awful shame, again, when we should know better, we do better. But obviously, some of us know and we don't do better. And some of us don't know and obviously we don't do better. And so we wonder why we have only a very few, and we're talking about that 80% again, the 80-20. Or I like to reverse and say 20-80 within the adherent of Imam Muhammad's leadership that he was referring to, and overwhelmingly that 8 out of 10 have not adopted this simple strategy of being united. That should be clear. An effort should be made towards trying to unify by any means necessary, since that's a popular saying. We know how it was a strategy of the intelligence unit of the government to divide civil rights comrades. Efforts were made to split us up. But that is, again, a Woolly Lynch. And to be specific, that's one of the schemes of the Satan that we have adopted. You see, we have the ability to adopt schemes of Satan or attributes of Satan for many reasons, go unattended. It is not addressed. And so that faction of divide and conquer is still prevalent and relevant right now. And so we want to have an open discussion on how we can unify and eradicate this game. And we can't eradicate something if we don't know it. That's why we are bringing it to our attention today. And we often bring it back as a open discussion can mature and come out of that divided insanity that I have explained. And so, Brother Henry, I'm going to yield. We have a comment or a question, or we can go to our first PSA at this time, sir.
All right. Just to let our audience know, our subject today is to be popular or smart. And the question is, are you popular or smart? What is your preference there? And we, Dr. Rashid is laying the foundation here on this. Then give it some thought, and we'd love to have your input. We'll be right back after this brief break here. Assalamu alaikum.
Peace be with you and welcome to Positive Solutions to Critical Issues, hosted by yours truly, Dr. Jamal Rashid and Instructor Henry Hasid. This program is sociologically as well as psychologically inclined, with Fitzer as its base. We examine the root seed to multiple effects that impact our holistic daily lives. So tune in each and every Thursday morning from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. Thank you and have a pleasant day.
Okay, let's see.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Martha Nyla Abdullah, Executive Director for CWSC, the Community-Wide Shura Conference. With God's name, the Merciful Benefactor, the Merciful Redeemer. We are openly acknowledging that God is one, that there are absolutely no partners with God, and that Prophet Muhammad, prayers and peace be upon him, is a servant and messenger of the one God. Through his example, we are able to live in this time, 450 years beyond the time of enslavement here in the United States of America. Proactively and from the mercy of the Almighty, we stand with the human family that Juneteenth is a reminder of what once was and how we can take a stand and be a contributing factor to the human family for the best of humanity, continuing to strive with the excellence that our foreparents stood with and for, many who lost their lives because they chose not to be subdued and treated inhumane. Juneteenth, again, is as a soul arising by the mercy of the one God. And now, welcome, dear human family, to Juneteenth 2021.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
All right, we're back with Critical Issues here, where our subject today is to be popular or to be smart. We wanted to give you a little time to think over that in the scene. Were you popular or do you want to be smart? You know, and usually Dr. Rashid, when I think about things like this, we always thought about school, education, I guess, there, because that looked like where it goes, but we know it happens throughout life. But it's really takes place a lot of times in the middle and high school area there, even though we know it continues on to higher education and it continues on through life here. And that's why we ask the question, do you want to be popular or do you want to be smart? And I think people will take probably both sides of that, because some went for popularity and the other went for smart. But I can remember that in high school, a lot of times when you were smart, you wasn't looked up to per se. Some people did. Some people did look up to you because they were one who wanted to be smart or help with whatever information they needed to make them smarter. But there was a lot of emphasis that was put on popularity, especially the popularity of a football player, a girl, a cheerleader, or something like that that was in school. It was a lot of popularity. And when you were smart and didn't have those other popularities, sometimes people were smart and popular, but when you didn't have those other things, they kind of looked down on you. And I just wondered, did you have any thought, and I know you taught in the public school system, did you have any thought on that process that was taking place in our education system? Assalamualaikum.
Assalamualaikum, Assalam. Am I sounding any better now? I got this mic to work a little better.
Yeah, I hear you good.
Okay. But I really don't want to focus on school as far as the division, as it is a historical disease that is deeper than school days. That was popular with Spike Lee, school days. I don't want us to dwell on popularity, which was really to be white, and self-hatred. It was a self-hated stigma. And I shouldn't say was, it still is. So I don't want to lose emphasis on this is a deep-rooted spiritual disease that we have to keep our attention towards. Because we can get off base by emphasizing academics, which is definitely a scheme of popularity or to be white. In other words, to be black, you are dumb. But when you look deeper, it is a self-hatred mentality. It even goes against doing for self, love self. There's all kinds of ways you can look at how deep-rooted or deeply rooted this disease is. Right here in our community, where you got different groups. And we know our imam, he tried to lead us towards inner faith. And we saw how many people rejected that. So again, that's that 80% that we want to just blame imam, but not see deeper into how tragic this disease is. So we have numerous calls online, and I know that you should have some kind of comment. Perhaps just press one. And so we're going to bring in Brother Muhammad Sharif. I see you have raised your hand. Let me bring you in. Assalamu alaikum. Brother Muhammad, you're on mute?
Yeah, wa alaikum assalam. Thank you, I were on mute. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how you doing this morning?
You're doing good, knowing that we're trying to address this disease.
Yes. Right, it is a disease. Mm-hmm.
Worse than cancer. It's a cancerous disease.
Mm-hmm.
It's worse, yes. It's worse than the pandemic or the whatever the virus thing is. We all infected.
Mm. Yeah, you spoke about the William Lynch letter. Yeah, I have that small booklet I've had for years, you know. William Lynch letter, The Making of a Slave. So when you were speaking about it, I went online. Yeah, it's still available. It's still there online. I think you have it in the audio version also. Those that don't have one read. I know it as a, when I got it with a publisher called Lushina Books. Lushena in Chicago. Don't know if that bookstore is still there. But anyway, even in Chicago, you know, if it's a bookstore there, they can get it right there. It's still available. But otherwise, you can go online and get it.
Right. Well, you know, many bookstores had to go bankrupt and out of business because that was the culture to do just that.
Mm-hmm. You're correct.
That's part of the disease is to be lazy. You won't have something put in a book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know someone was saying, like these two Europeans talking, you know. They're saying, you know, got information, knowledge, put in a joy, put it in a book because they don't like to read. And somebody came along and said, well, we got another. You can take it even further than that. They said, put the information knowledge in a book and put it in the library. That's a double whammy on it.
Yes. Because it goes to you're a square or a nerd. If you get caught reading. That's
mm-hmm.
part of the psychological damage of the self-hatred. And again, I want to emphasize, that's where the imam said 8 out of 10 of, and he just said, imams don't follow his leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want you to hold on, brother. We want to bring in area code 321-917. Okay, brother, you.
Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Jamal. This is Jalisa Law, Melbourne,
yes,
Florida. I was listening to your introduction, and it made me reflect on Imam Muhammad's language. I guess Rama put it in that book on racism, religion, and reconciliation, where it talked about the trauma, the traumatic experiences that we suffered have left us in a devastated situation. And the imam, and I'm paraphrasing what he said that we need to dwell on a philosophy for life and a sacred unity. in a sacred unity. And he talked about, he gave a couple of examples of communities that have band together and held on to unity, progress. And he gave a couple of examples of that. And I guess the emphasis, the impact of what he said has stayed on my mind, that we have to have a philosophy for life. And he gave us four focal points: education, business, culture, and governance, as a reasonable, I would say, focal point for us to band together on, finding something to band together on that we can agree on that will help all of our lives to be better. And I guess in the language he used, he said, dwell on it. And like he talked about, just like I brought to mind where Allah says, hold on to the rope of Allah. And the language is so strong in that directive. Some of the people talk about it like you could grab something with and just lock on to it and hold on to it. So this sacred unity, and he used that language, that in a sacred unity, that we should see this as something sacred.
Yes.
We do. And not like our prayers or whatever the things Allah wants us to do. So I just wanted to mention those things as a reflective point. And I could ask a question, but because, you know, I like to know from you some suggestions. I know you did a lot of work on this topic. Unfortunately, I haven't had the opportunity to review your books and whatnot because of my sight. I was listening at Muhammad said one of them may be on audio. I know that. But what would you suggest that, I guess in my mind, I'm always thinking about projects that once you, when you have something to work with and you, it seems to be a better tool for gathering support. So I don't see us having many. I know in various communities there are things that we are working on. I know, for instance, up there in New York where Muhammad is, they're working on the new Islamic Center. You know, but those are the type of things that gather us together when there's work to be done. So I'm wondering how we can, being so disunited in terms of demographics, stay more informed and of what's going on and what's needed. So make some suggestions for that, if you would, how we can rally the forces, so to speak.
Other than what we're doing now and what we have constantly been doing is bringing the two people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can lead people to the water, but you can't make them drink. So, you know, that is a stigma that's deeply rooted on why we just can't conform to some kind of maturity of recognizing this disease and give the kind of attention that it deserves. You know, you've gone over the emphasis that the man placed on it as putting it as sacred. They're trying to put some kind of preference that this is a major
priority. And so the social activity, obviously that would help to be social. You know, and to be physically together, but you are mentally billions of miles apart. And psychologically, you are billions of miles apart. And so we don't even want to emphasize the social when people don't even understand that we're socially ignorant. Because we can be in a social gathering and still not be together. Because that's just on a social connection. We can look at marriages and relationships same way.
Yes, sir.
Not on the same page. So we have to just keep stirring the pot that hopefully enough will recognize where we are. We're in the toilet. And our common enemies, they don't have to worry about us. In fact, many of them have become subjected to the same disease. And so I think once we have some interference, somebody's mic is open. Mark, is your mic open?
Well, open, just, that's not my noise. I'm listening to you. But that's not someone within traffic out there.
Okay. But I saw that his mic was open. I didn't know if he wanted to speak or not. His hand wasn't raised, but I saw the mic was open.
Hmm.
And Brother Muhammad, you still on? You have a comment?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I know you have a comment.
Oh yeah, on that you spoke about the divide and conquer. That's been used. I guess go all the way back to Pharaoh. I mean, it goes back farther than that. Divide and conquer. It's not, it's a two-part thing, you know. Divide and conquer. See, the enemy doesn't use it just the first part, divide. No, he wants divide and conquer. Like I said, putting that, yeah, we're going to, someone got a mic open or something.
Yeah. We have to close the mics if it don't stop quickly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Go ahead.
The disease. See, what makes a disease so bad is it starts inside and you can't see it, like you have a sore, whatever it is. Now, that inflammation has been going on inside. And you don't know it's been, the person doesn't know it's going on until it shows itself on the outside.
Right.
In the same way, that's how it is with disease. You don't know until you get some symptoms. By the time you get the symptoms, that it's already there, out of your sight. It's formed out of your sight. And it's like with people and organizations and families and communities all. The terrible thing is going on outside. Like they call it an inside job. It's going on before the symptoms come up. And by the time the symptoms come up, now it's a serious problem. So now you got two things you got to do. You got to work on it to cure that, solve the inflammation problem, and now you got to stop from spreading. You're going one stage to another. If you don't catch it in time, his spread is so far that it's too late. So when the doctor or the person goes there and says, you know, it's spread. It's what's called stage 4. And it's almost life-threatening. Now, just about ready to take you out now. But it started out of sight, you know? So
That's why we can say we on cold blue and intensive care.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we are.
Mm. Yeah. Now, you should have something there. Intensive care. Yeah, I know those who have been. I was in intensive care once. I had a serious accident. And when you're on intensive care, I mean, well, yeah, that's serious. Intensive care, we own that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, we do have another caller in the queue, and just hold on there, Muhammad, and we're gonna bring them in. I think it's our brother Mark Shaheed, and I had a comment or two I'd make after that, so we'll bring him in. Brother Mark.
Alaikum assalam to you, Brother Henry Hasib, and to you, Dr. Jamal Rashid, and to Brother Muhammad Sharif, and I think also Imam DeLacy Umar. I heard his voice earlier. I was just going to just listen, but Allah just put in my spirit to say something that may help in terms of the topic. Is it in terms of being popular or being smart? Years ago, Imam Muhammad was invited here to St. Louis, and we had a breakfast. And at that time, we had declared Muhammad School open. And he agreed to have our students to have breakfast with him and allow them to ask him any question they wanted to ask. And there was a young brother by the name of Rashid Mukman, who's now an imam and a very learned imam, a student of the Quran, a student of Imam Muhammad. And I never forget the question he asked the imam. And the question was, "Brother Imam, how did you get to be so smart?" A direct question. And Imam, oftentimes when young people would ask him a direct question, he'd give him a direct answer, and he didn't give a lot of detail. So Imam Muhammad answered the question direct with one sentence. Well, no, he asked him the question. He said, "You see the word smart?" And Rashid said, "Yes." He said, "In the word smart is the word art." He said, "I'm an artist." And he didn't say anything more. Well, the young Rashid Mukman, he thought about that. Also, Mark Shaheed, I thought about his answer too. And what the imam was actually saying to the young Rashid is, "I'm an artist because I use the ability that Allah has given to me, my creative ability, my ingenuity, in terms of being smart." And he always had a strategy. Now, popularity, when we look at popularity, it's like you can become popular in this society for basically anything. Basically anything. The problem, the issue, is morality. This is where the problem really is. The problem is in morality. Imam Muhammad, once again, Adam, the industrious man, the Adam had made progress in industry, you know, in industry. But the problem is that morality has been left behind. It's almost like that story that Brother Henry Hasib told in terms of the truth and the lie went swimming one day. The lie got out of the pool and put on truth's clothing and ran into town. And people looked and said, "Here comes the truth." And everybody got excited. But one person said, "Oh, wait a minute. Here comes the naked truth." Morality is trailing in this. But Imam Muhammad said that the human being, the human creation, was created for the moral life. If we can remember that, and this is what is absent in society today, even in the four birds, even when we talk about business and economic development, even when we look in terms of from the political perspective, as Dr. Jamal Rashid have had the topic, and Henry Hasib had the topic in terms of political expediency. No morality, you see. The same thing in terms of culture. Morality is not a part of that. Just think about that. Just think about how important morality actually is, and when it's overlooked, you can take anything denigrating and make it popular. Mm-hmm. This is what the problem is. And so until the human being comes back to the natural creation, as Allah has created the human being in terms for the moral life, to continue the moral life. See, in the soul, I'm going to say this because I don't have time to go deep into it, but those who know, they know this is true. It's in the Quran. There's two major components of the soul for the human being. One is the fujur, and the other one is taqwa. And you'll find that in Surah 91, that's Al-Shams, where they talk about the two components of the soul. Well, fujur represents the rational nature in the human being. And taqwa represents the moral nature in the human being. Those two natures are to work together, but the rational nature can never and should never get ahead of the moral nature. Now, there's a lot more to that. But in the rational nature, the rational inquiry, this is what helps to push the world forward in terms of what it is we have in terms of industry. But the moral nature has been left behind. I could say more, but I think I said enough. Hopefully that adds something to this topic. And I think the topic should be extended and look deeper into this in terms, do you want to be popular or do you want to be smart? Thank you. As-salamu alaykum.
Well, thank you. And you have extended your commentary to the point that it should have been awakened to various degrees of those who are online, how important this subject is, and that is a disease. And people have emphasized the point of it's contagious and that it is still deep in us right now.
Right. And
so we don't want to say it's in others and not in us.
Brother DeLacy mentioned this. He was asking the question, how can we make this a better? How can we bring this about? And one of the things that I tell people and my conversation with them is two things. I say, God only wants good for us, and that's all he accepts from us is the good. But we see that it's a lot of evil out here. And I further explain that the evil that is happening to us from us is because of Shaitan or our own self. And a lot of times it's from our own self. You talked about the division and how can we come together? We have to express and stress the good. And we cannot accept anything other than good. And when we see this,
then we have to address it, because we know that the Shaitan, his whole idea in life is to divide us. And when we look at a community or look at self or look at family and we're divided, we know that the Shaitan or ourselves have brought about something that is not natural to the nature of the human being. So then we have to bring us back to the way of Allah, our God. And if and Brother Mark said that we have to start with that moral base. If we put anything over the moral base or before the moral base, we're going to come out with the wrong result. As you know, we have to...
Yes, 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 Brother Henry. Yes, Brother Henry, you're right on point. See, you go right back to the first social institution, which is family life. What is the first teaching that we give to the baby? It's moral teaching. You see the difference between right and wrong. You see, and if this doesn't grow not only in the individual, but also, if it doesn't grow in the community life, then it's going to be reflected there's a void that's there. That's what we've seen today. It's not difficult to see it. I mean, we have it in all segments of society. This is what we see today. You'd be scratching your head, sir. How could that get? How could something like that get passed in the political arena? How could that? How could they allow this product to be sold in this country? You see, how could they allow this to be a part of the culture? How could they allow this to be taught in the schools, education from an academic perspective? And when you ask yourself the question, you go right back to what Imam Muhammad has said. The human being was created, was made for the moral life. That's a part of being the Khalifa, given the responsibility. But if you don't have a moral conscience, or you qualify, you see, for that, with freedom that's been given. So, no, Brother Henry, you're right on the right track here. And so when we look at that, there's nothing wrong in terms of being smart. If you're going to do what the Imam is saying, when he was asked the question, how did you get to be so smart? Allah has put in the original nature the creative ability for the human being. Now, he can't create like Allah creates. That's why Allah said he's the best of creators, which is only just letting us know, I have created something that I have given the ability with imagination to be created with ingenuity to do that. But the fact of the matter is morality has to be a part of everything that we do. I'll stop there.
And we're going to bring in another caller to get that, but you're right. And that's what we got to get back to is this kind of thinking to bring not only our community, but the general society back, because you turn on your television, you can see examples of all of that you're talking about, even at the highest level of government. And it's going on right as we speak. So we're going to bring in 727-741. Welcome to the program. State your name and where you're calling from.
Thank you. Martha Nyla Abdullah calling from St. Petersburg, Florida. Praise be to Almighty God. And thank you all so very much. Greetings of peace to everyone. You, Henry, Dr. Jamal, Mark, Muhammad Sharif, and to DeLacy, Imam DeLacy Umar, and all the listeners. And my comment as I'm listening, and you know, and in a situation, the next thing is saying how to, but putting those how to's in place. And going straight to the nugget is the family life, as Mark mentioned. The social, in that social awareness, the we speak of community organizations and we speak of our neighborhood associations, and that's where it is. And I believe highlighting it as I travel through the country now on the East Coast, I'm finding the common thread is when you smile or speak to someone, they return it. Generally, they return it. But if you but if you're initiating it, pray, and with the purpose of establishing that thread again, that, you know, making it more apparent. I'm going to now plug in CWSC, Community Wise Your Conference. That one of our goals is to do meet and greet, just as Imam Worthy Muhammad Rahim Allahullah, he has expressed that with like minds. So as we connect with like minds, and then we began to have a form of communication that is based on improving the communication process, then we have a working vehicle. And so this, here we are on AM360 as a tool, a ways and means, and with the objective of connecting with individuals. And as our voices are being heard, then we're putting into plan, right as we're speaking, that we improve how we communicate and what we're communicating about, and with the intent to make it become a useful tool in our community. So we're stressing, CWSC now is stressing that we do that with and connecting through the Model Community National Resource Directory, and we have now established the directors in different states, and those directors now are communicating every Wednesday for the purpose of developing their goals and plans to connect in their local areas. So the it's a process, and an intentional process. And so alhamdulillah for the authors, who we're now beginning to connect with other mediums for that purpose. And so we don't show, so that we show the connection rather than the division. So we're, inshallah, improving upon that appearance of that divisiveness that's present and the appearance of thereof. So thank you so very, very much. Just stressing to everyone, I'd like to say that this Saturday we will be honoring our directors. So please join us. We will be sending out an email, but for those who want to be on the Zoom and see the donor, the directors on Broadway, CWSC directors on Broadway. So inshallah, please join us Saturday at 3 p.m. It will be heard on AM360. That's 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Central, and 12 p.m. Pacific Coast Time. That's directors, CWSC directors on Broadway, so that we can continue this process. And for those who are already doing the work, praise be to Allah, but we want to bring it to the forefront during our conventions and beyond the conventions, making the work be seen. So thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you for all your comments and your commentary. We're about running out of time, and we want to emphasize, that's why we talk about the three decisions, that morality is number one. And many people are dead stuck on political expediency, which is immediate self-gratification. That's where the disease is. When we sum it up, that we're going to put me, what makes me happy. And so we have thoroughly covered this topic in 160 minutes that should hopefully resonate with everyone, that we have that disease that has to be addressed, and it just didn't start in a school setting. Academic school setting, but it's a worldwide cultural disease that's so relevant and prevalent right now, and it's beyond us, because anybody can adopt this scheme that Satan has planted. And so with that, Brother Henry, you can sign out with Imam Adam Biak, get ready for Money Sense, and thank you all for listening. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum, and area code 321. Okay, well, we got everyone out of the queue. We do appreciate your comments and all. because this is a program that's for all of us. You know, when we listen to AM 360, we should listen and take the attitude that this is ours, that this belongs to us. And I find out when people do that, then things go better. We used to look at things that, oh, this belongs to the government. We are that government that it belongs to. It's been great being with you today, and we're going to see you again next week at the same time in the same place. Our next voice that will be coming up is the voice of our brother Adam Biyar. And let's see, he's going to be, he didn't name his topic today, but I'm sure it's going to be a good one here. Brother Adam, we're waiting for you, so we'll be signing out here, and we'll see you next time at same place, same time, here on AM 360. Assalamu alaikum.
Inshallah, when I grow up, I'm going to join CWSC. I'm going to help remake the world for you and me. I'm going to be part of MCNRD and contribute my talent, my expertise. I'm going to apply for a CWSC scholarship someday in honor of a pioneer. I pray I grew up to be a leader, a strong woman, courageous with no fear. But until that day, I need you to stand in my place and be part of the group intellect until I can join the race. Visit CWSC.us because together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum, rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is Money Sense here on AM 360 on this Thursday morning, September 28th. And we welcome all of you to our program. And those that have remained online from our previous program with Dr. Jamal Rashid and Mayim Henry Hasib. So hopefully we have an interesting program today. That was my hopes. And before we get into that, I'm going to read from the Quran, Surah An-Najm, beginning with the 37th ayah. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa Ibrahim alladhi wafa ala taziru wa rizratun wizra ukra wa an laysa lil insani illa ma sa wa ana sayyahu sawfa yura thumma yujzahu jaza. وَإِنَّ إِلَى رَبِّكَ الْمُنْتَهَى صدق الله العظيم. And the translation is given by Abdul Yusuf Ali. With Allah's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. And of Ibrahim, who fulfilled his engagement. Namely, that no bearer of burdens can bear the burden of another. That man can have nothing but what he strives for. And that the fruit of his striving will soon be seen. Then will he be rewarded with a reward complete. That to thy Lord is the final goal. Sadaqallahu al-Azim, Allah speaks the truth, and surely Allah's words are true. Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. So in trying to put a discussion for today, and normally what I try to do is touch on some of the things that were predominant with me during the week, And I said, well, maybe this might be a good discussion, inshallah. So, but you're the determiners of that. Especially if you have comments and things. And on this one, your comments are much requested. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what our late lady, Imam W.D. Muhammad, radiallahu anhu, what he was wrestling with in him trying to teach us and bring us into the universe aspect of the Quran, but still giving us what he felt was that we needed, that what we needed, realizing that we have suffered in this country, we've been stripped of our identity as human beings, and this was an effort that many of our leaders over the years have tried to rectify, especially his father, Adonai Elijah Muhammad, who really came around at a time when we were going through a lot of things, and he would tell us to do for self. That was one of the mantras that was developed from the time that Adonai Elijah Muhammad led us to do for self. Because he saw that we had were relying too much on the so-called good graces of the descendants of our slave masters. We had relied too much. So we know that Don Elijah Muhammad, in his efforts to bring us dignity in the world, and how Don Elijah Muhammad would start various businesses, and put it in the community. And he would do it. I can remember it being related that Honorable Muhammad would go to a local butcher. And I forgot what nationality the butcher was. I mean, probably it was Caucasian. I forgot what ethnic group it came out of. And asked the butcher to show him how to cut the meats. And with that knowledge, the Honorable Muhammad started your meat market or your butcher. And Honorable Muhammad started a grocery store, and it's called it Your Store. Your Store. And he started other things in an attempt to ignite in us a passion to build our community, to provide for our own and provide for ourselves, right? Those of us, Don Elijah Muhammad's efforts. And then when we look at Imam Muhammad in his efforts, first it was AMCOP, right? Then he went from AMCOP to CPC, which is Collective Purchasing Conference, right? And then he added on to that name, Collective Purchasing Conference. He added on ComTrust, right? Those efforts. I said, have we ever really thought about why the man did what he did, why he wanted to establish those things, and is the need, whatever moved the man to establish those things, was there a need for that today? was there a need to have a thoughtful effort to establish that today? Right. So we need to go back and maybe get some of the reasonings why the man did what he did. Remember Salam Nutrition? Right? Or Graceline Fashions? And I'm sure the man felt that if we can provide for ourselves and quit relying on others to provide, isn't that what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said? Quit relying on the white man to do for you what you should be doing for yourself. Is there a need for that today? Or have we made it? Have we solved the problem? For the most part, have we solved that problem? Are we providing for ourselves? And I'm just asking those questions so maybe to get to invoke some thought in your mind. Because if you feel that we have, then this conversation we're going to have today is something historical. I mean, it's almost like going back to the early 1800s and talking about slavery. And say, well, that's history. Those times are gone. I know there are people that aspire to take us back there. And there are some amongst us that aspire to go back there because it was easier on the plantation in their thinking. Master took care of us. He did good. And we don't need to try to do it for ourselves. So those are the conversations I think I would like for us to have today, and not just have it ongoing. And it depends on what you come up with. And maybe it could be ongoing efforts. Because I know that idea attracted me to where I am right now. It attracted me, and maybe I'm sure it attracted many of you. So all the things that attracted us then, are they solved? Have they gone away? Do we need them at all? After all, we're Muslims. Alhamdulillah, we've accepted, we're part of the Ummatul Muslimin, the international body of Muslims, and we're where we need to be. Prophet Muhammad believes in Allah, believes in the Quran. That's all we need. There's no need to talk about the past. There's no need to talk about where we were and where we came from. We've arrived now. We've arrived now. There's no more need for that. And because we have arrived into the universal body of Muslims, there's no need to talk about race. But there's no race in Islam. Of course, now I'm being facetious now. I don't want y'all to run and tell, man, don't listen to Adam no more, man. He's gone crazy. But I'm looking at our actions. There's no need for that. There's no need to worry about that. Hey, we're Muslims, international body of Muslims. We're not part of those people no more. And let them go on their own. We have no reason to worry about what they're doing, to speak on the injustice they're receiving. Right? Because they're not Muslim, they're Catholics. I mean, I get all kind of, you know, all kind of stuff that hits me on social media and other places. Even every now and then a live person comes up to me with that. I think the word's going around now that they tell him, don't go to Adam with that because he's gonna challenge you. But I'm sure it's going around. And I'm sure it's out there so much that even some of us who come out of this community are hesitating, are questioning themselves, are questioning whether they are understanding Islam properly. They're questioning themselves, so much so that they balk at trying to defend our community, defend our past. Because they bought into the, well, I don't want to use bidda, but the bidda. I don't want to be a victim of that. So when that conversation comes up, I cower. I don't say things. I don't challenge. And I know for me, I ask Allah never to let me be in such a bad condition in my thinking that I don't defend the community I came out of. Never let me do that. And I'm hoping that I'm speaking to people the same, that think the same. So anyway, we talked about the efforts of the man to establish the CPC, Collective Purchasing Conference, or ComTrust. And all these names have meaning. All these names have meaning. ComTrust. Well, why do they name it ComTrust? ComTrust. Well, in my doing my research, the com is for community. And the trust that we have put in Imam Muhammad, the trust that we put in Imam Muhammad to send funds, knowing that he would do the right thing for it. That's calm trust. All right? So the Imam said, I'm going to read a quote from him. Imam said, community is what we have to focus on. God does not speak to us individually in the Quran except for our need to support the collective, the big picture. That's the only reason God speaks to us individually, to help us to be fit to support the whole community, the whole people, not just our individual selves. All right? And I remember another lecturing man said that the best expression of Islam is in community life. In community life. Now, I know the bigger picture is talking about the worldwide community, right? But let's look at the smaller subset, the micro application of that. And in the micro application of that, we see that every part of the community, when you go, whether it's the Muslim community in Malaysia or the Muslim community in Indonesia or the Muslim community in Africa, whatever, in the microcosm application of that, you see that there are Muslims in their own environment that have established something for their community to help advance their community. The only time it's a problem, is when that language is used by African Americans. They come to us and try to convince us there's no race in Islam. I better go over to the Pakistanis and tell them that. Go to the Malaysians and Yemenis and tell them that. You wouldn't have enough nerve to go to them and tell them that. But you come to us with that stuff. So I'll tell you, let me play this PSA, and I do see we have a caller that raised their hands and want to make a comment, ask a question. So we'll be right back after this message.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
All right, this is Money Sensing on AM360 and Adam B.I. We're going to go to the phone lines. We have 314-833.
Assalamu alaikum. Alaikum assalam, Imam Adam B.I. and to your very astute radio listening audience there, AM360. This is Mark Shaheed from the STL, Gateway City of St. Louis, and show me state of Missouri. Want to say alhamdulillah. The praise and thanks belongs to Allah first and foremost always. This is a good topic. This is a really good topic for reflections, reflection on what Imam Muhammad established. But I think the real question is, did we get it then? Or have we come to the conclusion that we should get it now in the implementation? You know, you were saying and giving some quotes by Imam Muhammad and breaking down contrast, and you're absolutely correct. In addition to that, an addendum, one of Imam Muhammad's addresses to us as a community, he said, I'm elated that you trust me as your leader. He said, but I would want you to trust each other. He said, because I'm one man. He said, I could die at any time. Now, this is wisdom in what the Imam was saying to us. And Adam, I think that you know this has been one of the stumbling blocks. You know, I'm glad you're bringing the topic up. This has been one of the stumbling blocks in our community in terms of trusting each other. You know, grace line in terms of striving to establish a credit union for the good of our community that will help to advance our community, as other communities have established, you know, a credit institution. All of these things are very, very important. But if I ask you the question, what has been perhaps one of the biggest obstacles, or for anybody that's trying to establish something that is of good in having the vision that Imam Muhammad had for this community, this was a higher level. See, the work under the Al-Vilaj, and the reason I can say this, having been in the community coming in the 60s, I saw what the Al-Vilaj Muhammad was doing in terms of, say, doing for self. This is like the foundation, doing for self, and not depending on others to do for you, taking responsibility. And let me say this, I love those ayats that you recited. No soul can bear the burden of another. Otherwise, nobody can accept a responsibility for another. That's to be looked at in two ways in the Quran, individually and collectively. And then Allah follows that up, 53:39, and says the human being can only get what they consciously strive for. And then it's followed up, and soon there will be a manifestation of the effort the work that you put in to reach that goal. I'm paraphrasing it, but hopefully just to try to simplify that. And the greatest expression, like you said earlier, as Imam Muhammad has said to us, is in community life. It's in community life. Now look at trust. Individually, in any relationship, but there's no trust. Trust is a must. Otherwise, the relationship is a bust. That's what it is. And even in terms of community, you can't move forward in a community if there's no trust. Trust is a must. Otherwise, you don't advance the community life. This is very important. You know, even when Imam Muhammad tried to give us the name Bilalian, a more dignified name, basically, overall, as a community, we wasn't ready for that. Now, we know Bilal ibn Rabah as the first muezzin, the caller to prayer, but do we know that Bilal ibn Rabah was the first treasurer in the community? Do we know that? Do you know you have to have trust? And who gave him that position? Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Well, I could say more, but I'm going to stop here. One of the biggest issues is trust that we have in this community. And I know I may be opening up a, as they say, proverbial can of worms, but we have to deal with the reality. I'll stop there, Adam. That's an excellent production, an excellent topic in terms of what Imam Muhammad was taking us to, but this was a higher level in terms of collective purchasing. But that means that we had to trust each other, trust the leader, trust each other, but also, as Imam Muhammad say, I'm one man, and I may die anytime, but you got to be able to trust each other. I'll stop there. As-salamu alaykum.
Walaikum as-salam. Thank you very much, Brother Mark. Appreciate those comments. All right, let's go back to the phone lines. 914-434.
As-salamu alaykum. Yeah, walaikum as-salam. It's Muhammad Sharif. It's Mount Vernon. How are you, Imam Adam?
I'm doing good, Brother Muhammad. Alhamdulillah. Thanks for calling in, man.
Yeah, this is a good topic from the previous program. You know, you spoke about the, you know, got the four rivers, you know, education, business, culture, and government. I believe at this point that we have got the education down pretty good. Like the Imam has taught us well in his 33 years, and now going over to his teachings and lessons for the past, what, 2008. Yeah, so we can go and ask just about anyone in the community now. But do you know religion? And just about 99.999% would say, yes, I know religion. No. And we have many speakers that come from different levels, from the bottom to the top. And we just about know religion. Praise be to Allah. Imam taught us well. And now we're at the second river, business. And I think we are ready now to go further into business and economics. And we know there are a few people, normal people, that's doing pretty well in the business area. And you are one of those. We know your business history. You told us how you got started from college, your first job where you went to working for a big, well-known company. You moved on from there. helping your own business. And you've been did pretty well as a business person. And now you spoke about Collect AMCOP and CPC. I was just listening again, but community trust, come trust. So we got the basics now, of, I believe, in business. We just need the people to come forward now. Let's really go to the next step. And y'all just thinking, you know, with CPC, when Mayor said that, he asked about people making investments in CPC with $2,000. That was the minimum. They would start with $2,000 and move from there. Now, some people put in $2,000, some you put in, I heard one group had put up $80,000 in CPC. So, and now we have to complete that now. And just in our local community, now that $1,995, the man said CPC, $2,000. Now, a group we referred back to that a few months ago. $2,000. How many people have $2,000 at hand in a savings account or checking account or just have family members come together with $2,000? And you know what, 500 people that were going back to CPC, 1995, man, I brought it to us. 500 people with $2,000 each, that's $1 million. 500 people with $2,000, that's $1 million. You know, we can raise $1 million a day in this community. Among us, we got $2,000. Just 500 people. Just think of your, and just in your local community, in your neighborhood, you got 500 people that got $2,000. Right here, that we're talking to a small group, we're talking right now. We don't have, we know, there's a number of people that got $2,000 or can get it.
Mama,
almost
Mama.
Like this. Yeah, go ahead. Okay, yeah.
We ain't solved the trust issue yet.
What's that?
And that's the problem. We haven't solved the trust problem yet. Till you solve the trust problem, people are not going to collect their money. It's not a point of whether you have the money or not. But who's going to trust, who's got this position of trust that somebody going to send them $500?
No, I was trying to start with the basic is those who have $2,000.
But they don't trust.
It's not no, I won't get to the trust yet. I'm telling
you,
how many people that we know that have $2,000? Not Adam, you're not going to send it any place. You're not going to send it to any place. You just want, do you have $2,000? Do we have 500 people got $2,000? You're not going to send the money any place. It's not about the trust fact right now. Just do you have $2,000? Can you have $2,000 in your checking account, your banking account, your friends, your family members? Do we have $2,000? Do we have 500 people that got $2,000? If you just keep it in your pocket or in your bank account,
I got
$2,000.
Muhammad, that's what they're doing now. They're keeping it in their pocket. But good is it if it's in their pocket?
That's good if they have it. Some people don't even, we don't have two, but you got $2,000. Okay,
maybe
you got in your pocket. Now we work on the trust factor.
Maybe I'm missing your point. Maybe I'm missing it. Maybe if somebody else understands what you're talking about, press one. Maybe I'm missing it. All right. It's not about the we know we got some money because every year they advertise to the world that the African Americans have $1.8 trillion. They're gonna spend $1.8 trillion next year. They tell everybody, they tell the whole world how much money we're gonna spend. But that's just free advertising to get them over here because they're saying, spend it with somebody. Come over here and open a business in their community, and they'll spend it with you. And people come over every year, Koreans, Yemenis. There's going to be a new people come over next year we ain't even thought about. And they're going to come over here and open up business in our community so we can spend our money with them. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem Imam Muhammad was trying to address. I'm looking this. I'm reading from this speech he gave in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
We said the same thing. We're not providing. We're not selling to ourselves. We're not buying from ourselves. And then when African American business people make money, they move. Go somewhere else. Make their money. There's very few of them open their businesses in our community. And the man's focus in Chicago was to have money, have businesses in our own communities, to build up our own community. Like, that was the man's focus. So we got money, but the money don't benefit us. It don't establish nothing for us. So, you know, the point about do we have money, that's already been solved. I mean, you know, we know we got the money. We got another person who wants to say something, Muhammad. Let me bring them in. Okay, hold on a second.
All right.
Let's go to 336-722. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam, brother. Man, how you doing?
Doing good, brother.
I have a simple question to ask. Years ago, Imam Muhammad gave a lecture called Words Make People. So the question is, was he successful or failure among us with that lecture? I would like to hear what the Muslims have to say about that. As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum as-salam. All right, Words Make People. I guess we got, I don't know if Dr. Jamal's online. I know Brother Imam Michael Fahir has a program, Words Make People. So it's just that to say was he successful in that, or have we learned from that? You have to go back and see how many of us really heard the lecture and know what he said in the lecture to say that. So that would be the first thing that would come to my mind before I start grading people on how we react. And trust me, right now I'm a hard grader when it comes to what the Imam taught and what I gleaned from what the Imam was teaching us and seeing those actually being applied in real life. Right? Now, Muhammad, you know and I know, if we're talking about how many people got $50, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably, oh, man, I would guess there would be probably 100,000 Muslims in our community got $50, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're still working on then pooling that $50 towards education. So we don't have to look about we don't have to look at $500 or $1,000. Just drop it down to $50. And we haven't convinced them that is worthy to send $50 to support a Clara Muhammad school. We haven't even convinced them of that. Now you're talking about 500? And then we have removed the trust factor. You ain't got to deal with trust because you're not sending that $50 to anybody. You're sending it directly to the school. That's one thing I learned. Don't send the money to me. Because I ain't got to deal with it. I mean, one sister called me one time and said, Imam Adam, what you doing with the money? I said, what I'm doing with what money? I said, what I'm doing with what money? And then she was talking about the $50. I said, they're not sending the money to me. Can you imagine if they were sending the money to me? Oh, man, it'd be all over the country. That new car, you may have had them bought. That's where he got it from.
Mm-hmm.
You know? He bought him a new car with y'all $50. Well, no, don't send the money to me. Send it directly to the schools. You understand? So we're still dealing with the trust factor. He want that. All right? So,
now, now you're at the point where I want to go, and that is, I don't know if everyone listening now, they probably know by this time, how Allah bless you to come with the idea of supporting the schools. You say you had the thought that, you know, I can support, I'll support the schools. Now if I can find 99 more people to join me in that effort, and we'll send the money directly to the school. Allah bless you with that idea to send it directly to the school.
Well, but now I'm saying, like now, I said. You want to know how I came up with the idea, brother? You want to know how I came up with the idea?
Go ahead.
We built a masjid in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Because the state came through, made a right-of-way purchase, and purchased our old master property. Gave us $120,000. You know somebody went around the country saying, I stole $120,000? You follow?
Mm.
A baseless accusation. I was in Chicago at a convention, and I went to the men's room, and I was washing my hands, and some brother said, did you hear about that, ma'am? And he was talking to another brother. You hear about that, ma'am, in Fayetteville, North Carolina? He said, no, what? They say he stole $120,000. And they know what I was in there, that who I was. So I turned to him, and I said, he did what? I said, he did what? He stole $120,000. We need to hang that bum.
Right.
So I don't want to go around the country that I stole $50 from somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, experience told me to know, don't send the money to me. All right, let's go to the phone. We do have another person on the line. I want to bring them on my hold on, mama, okay?
All right.
All right, Erico 724. Sister, if you press 1 again, I'm going to bring you in. 724, Erico 724.
Assalamu alaikum. It's Sister Gail Muhammad from here in Pennsylvania.
Oh, Sister Gail, okay. I'm good to see you. Yes, ma'am.
You know, the issue of trust is very important. But I think what people, as far as like even education, you know, we're in a society that has provided public education through our tax dollars. Collectively on a bigger scale. And I think it takes a little while, depending on what, you know, a city or whatever you live in. Now, if the bigger cities where there's the most amount of Muslims have come together and started a school, then it makes it, you know, easier to draw. But I think we need to advertise the success stories of businesses and the schools that are available, because maybe some people don't know. I don't, not sure in the Muslim Journal if there's a section with schools.
Yeah.
That would probably help, because so many Muslims left the schools and put their children back in public schools, and a lot of the schools closed down. But I think now with the way education is going and things like that, people are, there's more of a need now to homeschool and send your children to private schools, because people see a failure in the public school system, failures. So,
that's why Sister Mary Muhammad started the school originally.
But what I'm saying, there was a gap.
She realized it.
Go ahead.
Because when she started the school, she teach her children, the law of the land was you had to send your children to the school that we established. And it was illegal to pull your children at the school and do that. So that's not a problem now.
But that's no longer the case.
Yeah.
Because they were
and
losing.
It was the case in the 70s and the 60s.
Right. But I'm saying we know I live in a small town where there's not a lot of Muslims and there's definitely not no school. But over in Youngstown, where before I moved out in this area, they did have a school a long time ago. But as people became more economically established, a lot of them moved to the bigger cities and things like that, because even the building, we don't have the building anymore. It had an auditorium. They did have, a weekend school or something like that. It never evolved into a full-time school. But I think
we need to promote the success stories.
We all know about Atlanta. Pardon?
The reason we established 150, and at that time in 2016, there was only 7 full-time schools that we can identify.
Right.
Believe me, that had dropped. That had dropped way down. Right?
Right.
So we established it to stop the bleeding, to be an aid to the schools that were still existing, so they wouldn't have to make that decision like that. And we do have, like the school in Nashville, they just celebrated their 52nd anniversary. And they had a nice fundraiser. They raised $37,000 at their fundraiser. And that's needed. So we came up with it to help, not to be the sole provider source, but to help.
Right.
And to help the students. Now, and we've heard of other
parents.
We have other parents that we're going to establish. Well,
right.
Parents can't support a school like that. Our tax dollars
go into the public funds and come back into school districts. And what has happened with all these private schools, they've redirected some of that money that it doesn't all go to public school. It can all, if the private schools, if the private schools have to come up with a formula to get that money. And I think
the money follows the child. That's what's happening in a lot of these controlled states. The money follows the child rather than. So if the child goes to a private school, then the money follows it. And that's one of the things that they're doing, which is, again, taking money out of the public schools. And most African Americans are in public schools. It's a political thing. It's a political thing.
Yeah, it is.
But even with that.
And then we have to learn that because of coming out of that public school free education, you didn't have to really pay a tuition because it was already paid for, then over time the mind has to change with the being educated to see the benefit, and then they will take their money and invest it in their child to pay the tuition because, it's just a mind shift. And it's slowly coming about because people are seeing the value more in private education than in public. And I think it's just taking time.
Let me say one thing, Sister Gail. Let me say one thing now, and I do have another caller. Let me say one thing. The public schools will not produce what we're looking for. They will not produce what we need for our future.
But they have.
And
I mean,
more of us.
Most of us, I don't know, because I've never been from a big city. But the public schools have produced good. We can't say that because I don't know. Most of the, I would say, the majority of African Americans come through the public school system, and they have been successful coming through that. But is that the only way? Because now there's been a shift in that. Were you publicly educated or privately educated?
When I say us. About us as members of this community, our community, our Muslim community, that's the us I'm talking about. And it will not produce the mindset of what we need to go into the future if we're saying that this Islamic education is necessary. That's what I mean. It won't produce what we need for the future. And for the parents and the members and the believers that in those cities that they have schools operating, they need our support to continue. That's the bottom line. They have made the conscious decision to not look for public education to produce the Muslim children they want to produce, and I want to help them. Bottom line. Okay? Thank you very much, Sister. I'm going to go to have another call here.
We appreciate what you've done. Thank you.
Thank you, man. All right, let's go to another line, another call. 332-259, 332-259. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Kashif, New York City. Speaking of the Clara Muhammad School funding, I would like to participate in that, and I would like to know how do I do that? Is there an address or phone number or whatever that I can call or write or whatever to make my contribution?
Well, I have your number. I'll give you a call, okay?
Okay, good.
I'll be all right.
All right.
I'll give you a call.
That'll work.
My brother, thank you, man.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you.
And for anybody else is interested, I'll give you my number. You can send me a text or something. 910-527-6641. Send me a text and text me the email address and we'll get something to you. Thank you very much. All right, MC, I think this is Mark. Mark, you raise your hand again?
Yes, sir, I did. Once again, assalamu alaikum. You know, before Sister Gail came on, I was kind of chuckling in a way in terms of the allegations that came against you. I know how that feel in that regard when they false allegations. And this is how and why we need to accept the Quran for guidance for us. So when things like that come to us, you know, we know what Allah says, and then that's how we should process things that come to us. It's, if you are true, Allah says, bring your proof. If what you say is true, bring your evidence, bring your truth with that. And if you don't have that, you shouldn't spread that. You shouldn't accept that. You know, and Allah says avoid suspicion as much as possible. In some cases, suspicion is a sin. And oftentimes, we unconsciously do those type of things. We're talking about trust. We're talking about trust, just like that experience that you had in the men's room, two brothers talking about you and not even knowing and realizing there you were. That's a nation of the character of people. And so when other people hear it and they don't filter that through the Quran, what God says, what Allah says. Imam Muhammad always, when he taught, he says, God says. So you don't have an argument with people like, this is your opinion, this is my opinion. No, God says this. So false allegations, it's not good. Because then when everybody that hear that, how they processing that, taking it as truth, not even questioning, would you say that before that person, what you said about that person to me? That's what I do. Would you say before that person what you were saying behind their back? And Allah asked the question, would you like to eat your brother's flesh? You see, this is the Quran. That's not me. That's what God says. But we don't follow the Quran. You see? And then this brings about the mistrust in the community. They don't know Adam Bayah. They don't know him. But they heard through an allegation that was a false allegation. Mm-hmm. See, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And those things need to be stopped in our community. And the way we stop them in the community is by doing what God says. If we do that, I guarantee you that person won't come to you with false allegations. I stopped there, but I had to say that. And you're absolutely 100% right, Imam Adam, in terms of the public school. They will not provide what we need. We need Islamic schools in every major city, everywhere, for ourselves, so we can produce the type of leaders and leadership that Imam envisioned and his mission was for that. So we just have to continue to work toward that effort. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you, Brother Mark. We do have another caller, but unfortunately we're at the top of the hour. Sorry we couldn't get to you, but please come get back with us next week, and so I will be on the air, and we'll maybe continue this topic. What do you think? Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. We're going to get out the way and get ready for you, ma'am. Yusuf Ramadan, whose topic is foreign policy and domestic policy are inextricably linked together. For those of you that called in, press 1 and come out of the queue, and we'll get ready for our new, for the next show. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. This is your brother, Kareem Hamid, inviting you to join in the study group of the lecture of Imam Waraseddin Muhammad Rahimallah Alayhi, broadcast Saturday morning at 6 a.m. Central Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. The first hour, we shall play a lecture or address from Imam Waraseddin Muhammad Rahimallah Alayhi, and in the second hour, we shall open up the telephone line and share with each other the various beneficial points of interest contained in the lecture or address. So join the study group of the lectures of Imam Waraseddin Muhammad Rahimallah Alayhi on the evolution of revolutionary thought and created purpose every Saturday at 6 a.m. Central Standard Time on American Muslim 360. Let's share. Thank you.
American Muslim 360 is proud to present the Thursday morning edition of A New Day for Al-Islam in America Radio with your host, Yusuf Ramadan.
Assalamu alaikum. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. That is peace be unto you. With God's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer, we'd like to welcome everyone to New Day for Al-Islam in America. American Muslim 360 Edition, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation. My name is Yusuf Ramadan, and I'll be your host today. And this is the program that talks about current events, trending topics, and issues of concern from the Muslim perspective. And as we always say, the Muslim perspective is and always should be the human perspective. So today, as our love brother Imam Adam said, that our topic today is foreign policy and domestic policy are inextricably linked together, because there are those that want to make a separation. They say we should only be focusing on our domestic policy. Don't worry about foreign policy. Let them take care of that. We don't know about that. Well, I don't know if we know about either one, really, the way we should. I remember Imam W. Muhammad, Rahimahullah Alayh, he pointed us to the book by Zbigniew Brzezinski, former Secretary of State, and his book was called The Grand Chessboard, talking about the international world, the globe, the grand chessboard, letting you know that they're playing chess. And what the move should be in order for them to, or the people that he represents, to assert influence and even dominance over the rest of the world that's on their chessboard. And that can't be done without foreign policy, without economic policy, giving money to countries for various reasons. Some would say for humanitarian reasons, if they have a flood or an earthquake, or supporting a war in Ukraine, in Syria, in Afghanistan, in Iraq. And they are quote-unquote declared wars and some undeclared wars. And we have 800, 900 military bases throughout this world. Did you know that? Throughout the globe. But you would like to believe, or they would like for you to believe, that their intentions are pure and that they have no other intention about making the world safe for democracy. And the question is, do we even have it here to make it safe for democracy? So Imam Adams' program was very, very timely and spot on in terms of the economic philosophy of our community, of our country, and our community specifically, you know, the trust factor, which I believe he was right. We already know that we have people with the money, but we also have people who don't have the money. They say that probably 40% of Americans don't have $400 for an emergency. And probably 60% or higher don't have $1,000 for a financial emergency that might come up. And emergencies always come up. The tree in front of my house became dangerous because it had a lot of dead branches on it. And they were falling. And particularly with this winter coming up, you're looking at snow and ice, living in the Northeast. Even during the summer and fall, you have hurricanes and rainy season, making them wet and heavy. And one fell, boom, right on the walkway. That could have hit one of my family members. or the mailman or strength. So you had to come up with, I had to come up with some money. Those are very expensive procedures to cut those limbs down. And it can be dangerous. They informed me they had to have special insurance to do it, et cetera. But what people do who don't have resources is they wait and just hope that nothing bad will happen. And then something bad happens, and then they have an even greater expense, an even bigger expense than they had to alleviate the potential problem. So this is the society that we live in. And, you know, I was looking at keeping with that theme that Emmanuel Adam was talking about. He's correct. The figures that they put out of the so-called spending power of African Americans in this country, and they say we'd be the 16th largest, you know, country in the world, et cetera. And he's talking about how they're not putting that out to help us. They're putting that out for people to take advantage of the fact that we have that much money to spend. There's other people who are communists and socialists that also say that it's a myth, but they're saying it from another point of view. And they're partially correct. They say it as a myth that, in other words, when you add up the GDP, the gross domestic product of the country, or of that particular, of our particular community, how much money we take in and how much money we spend. The point that they're correct about is people assume that you can take that money and do what Brother Sharif was saying, send $2,000 somewhere else. That's not true. In other words, they're taking into account the money, and I'm not saying that Brother Sharif is wrong. There are people that there's people that have $2,000 in their bank account, or hidden in a coffee jar or whatever. That's absolutely true. What I'm saying is, when they count your spending power, they will look at it in terms of you just got a $30,000 loan to buy a car. So they add that to your available spending power. That's not true. You say, well, how come that's not true, brother man? They gave you a loan for $30,000. Because you can't take that. They gave you that loan specifically to buy that car from them. They never transferred $30,000 into your account. Where you could say, never mind, I changed my mind. I'm not going to buy that Chevy or whatever that car is. You know, we like luxury cars, Mercedes-Benz, BMW. I changed my mind. I'm going to join with Brother Sharif and 10 other brothers. We're going to put up $30,000 apiece. We're going to have $300,000. We're going to start a business. You can't do that. Because they only gave you that $30,000 to buy that car. When they gave you that $150,000 or $250,000 mortgage, you can't. They don't put no money in your account, not in one dime. They pay the mortgage, or they buy the home, they buy the car. See, that's why the other thing we don't understand, when we go to buy a car, okay, I'm gonna pay cash. That's not exciting to them that you're paying cash. Because those cars get paid for anyway. That dealership gets the car paid for. Okay? They're going to pay for the car. Matter of fact, they'd rather you finance it so they can make interest off you. So that's not a flex when you come in there and say, I'm going to pay cash. They don't want to hear that. They want you to make payments. They want you to borrow. Because they're going to make money off you. Or if that company, wherever you go to, Mercedes-Benz or Lexus or whatever, they have their own finance company. So that finance company is going to give the dealer all the money for the car. The dealer not waiting on your monthly payment and then, okay, that's one, that's two. No, they get paid off. They sold the car, it's paid. You owe, they don't owe. So what they're doing is they're massaging these numbers. They have what they call lies, damn lies, and statistics. So they use those statistics in ways to make you think a certain thing that's not the reality. In other words, some of you have been in this position. I have, where my credit was messed up. So you can't get a credit card. You can't get a major credit card, Visa, American Express, MasterCard. No, they're not giving you that. You can't even get a Diamonds Club card. You can't even get an Amoco gas card. You messed that up. But they'll send you something in the mail with a catalog with all types of products in it. And they tell you, we will give you credit, but only if you buy these products and from us. Because they know your credit is bad. You follow what I'm saying? That's the same concept that they're doing with the car and the house. You qualify for that much credit, but if you go with your bank and try to get that much for a loan and you said it was for a business, they wouldn't give it to you. That's not all of you. Some of you have good credit. Your credit is that good. They would give you a personal loan or a business loan. And the internet is full of people that's telling you, oh, your credit is messed up. Don't worry about it. You can get you a business loan. We'll still get you a $50,000 business loan. And you can get 10 of those. So do you think that the people that are giving out the loans, that they don't know that there's people plotting to get loans like that? You think these people are dumb? No. They tell you to get a car, put it in your business name. Unless your business is General Foods or General Motors, they're going to make you give a PG, a personal guarantee. A personal guarantee. That if you can put it in your business name if you have certain things in place. You have a business address, and you know, they can validate that you have a legitimate business, but they still gonna make you give a personal guarantee in most cases. I've had a car in my business name. If you don't pay the car note, they're coming after you. They're not going after you. They know you are the business. There's no business without you. You don't have a multinational corporation that if you're not the CEO anymore, that the company is going up. No, they'll get another CEO. So if you represent a big company like that, sure, they'll put it in your name because they know that it's going to be paid. But you're not going to come back next week and say, never mind, I'm closing down the business. I closed the business. And they're going to get stuck. Don't work that way. Now, you know, during the time of the Vietnam War and Martin Luther King, may Allah forgive me, sins, Jr., and grant him the paradise, he wrote a very famous speech, Why I Oppose the Vietnam War. And he attributed to Brother Malcolm. Which Malcolm? Which other Malcolm you talking about? There's only one Malcolm. He may have told us that. Everybody knows. Which Oprah? Where's the other Oprah? There's only one Malcolm, the Malcolm, El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, also known as Malcolm X, that came from us. Everybody wants to claim Malcolm, and we understand. He was such an impactful figure. I was invited years ago to speak on a panel at the Schomburg, at the famous Schomburg Museum for studying black history, created by Arthur Schomburg in Harlem. And I was invited to speak on Malcolm's legacy as an American Muslim or Muslim American. And one of the Pan-African brothers, and he after we spoke, I was there with a brother, and this brother's passed on too, Brother Martin, who wrote the book, May Allah Forgive Me, Sins, Grant Him Paradise, young brother, called Green Dean, and talking about the Islamic view of climate change having a green economy, et cetera. And another sister who was a doctor. I forget her name now. Anyway, he asked me, why aren't y'all talking about Malcolm as a black nationalist or pan-Africanist? I said, well, first of all, that's not the theme of the program. I wasn't asked to speak about that. Perhaps you want to speak about it, but that's not why I was invited here. But they want to claim Malcolm. The black nationalists want to claim Malcolm. The pan-Africanists want to claim Malcolm. The Muslims claim Malcolm. So, but Malcolm, the man explained to us, came from us. Our community produced Malcolm, any way you want to look at it. Now, his daughter, one of his daughters who he had as a guest speaker, she took umbrage to that. Not totally, but they were saying if it wasn't for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, there wouldn't be no Malcolm. And that's true. I think that's true. But she was saying that her grandfather, Malcolm's father, who was murdered under mysterious circumstances, which we believe was by the Klan, that he was a Garveyite. And so Malcolm's political education and awakening would have come from that. But we didn't see that. So I understand her trying to defend her father and speaking up for her father. That's her father. That's her right. But I can't agree with her on that. Malcolm is the one, and I correct people all the time when I see them online. Malcolm was not a civil rights leader. They're trying to diminish Malcolm when they say that. Malcolm absolutely was not a civil rights leader. He was a human rights leader. Okay? So we have some important announcements for you, so please don't touch that dial. We'll be back in a while.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
I believe that.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to AM 360. Join your host, Manira Habil, every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we explore relationship topics addressing what we didn't know, what we've learned, and what we need to know and why. Because on this show, it's all about courtship and marriage.
Peace be with you and welcome to Positive Solutions to Critical Issues, hosted by yours truly, Dr. Jamal Rashid and instructor Henry Hasid. This program is sociologically as well as psychologically inclined, with Fitler as its base. We examine the root seed to multiple effects that impact our holistic daily lives. So tune in each and every Thursday morning from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. Thank you and have a pleasant day.
Alhamdulillah, we're back. Brother Mark, I see your hand up. Just give me a minute. I don't know if you're in the queue from before, but we'll bring you in a second. You know, Brother Malcolm talked about taking our circumstances here, dealing with Jim Crow and police abuse, et cetera, to the United Nations and to the World Court. Martin Luther King, when he got into opposing the Vietnam War, he got great pushback from the other so-called civil rights leaders. that he was distracting and he was going to make an enemy out of LBJ. LBJ had worked with him to get the Voting Rights Act passed, et cetera, to help us. And LBJ said, they said he felt betrayed by Martin Luther King. And they were saying, what does that got to do with us, foreign policy? Muhammad Ali, Rahim Ali, who refused to accept his draft status and was stripped of his title and almost imprisoned and called a traitor, et cetera, dealing with foreign policy. You know, Martin King was excoriated by the other civil rights leaders. You know, during the time of the Nation of Islam under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we didn't participate in civil rights demonstrations and marches and things of that nature. We didn't believe in that. So to call Malcolm a civil rights leader, first of all, it's deliberate. They know he wasn't a civil rights leader. But they use that term as an all-encompassing term. So he's putting them in the same category with John Lewis, who was famous for getting beat unmercifully on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Malcolm said, we didn't turn the other cheek. So lumping them all together, that's a strategy. They just gave out some awards the other day. They want to keep us in that civil rights mind that we're fighting for civil rights. But when we look at the immigrant crisis that's plaguing New York City and other, the mayor's talking about budget cuts due to all the immigrants being here. So we have to find a happy medium, because one politician was on this morning on the show, television, talking about we have to get them out of here. The other one, who was a so-called liberal, she was saying, we have to be compassionate. These are 700 children. You know, the governor of Texas sent them here, so we have to look out for them. And the other one was saying, well, you got people that's been here all their lives. Their services are going to be cut. And she disingenuously said, they're going to have to cut the police department. They will never do that for anybody. And we'll get into that. That's never going to happen. Okay? Because first of all, they know it's political suicide. And that's something that they don't believe they can't live without the police resources up to its maximum potential financially. So that won't happen. She just said that to scare people. But they are gonna cut other essential services. Now, in our religion, we believe in helping the widows and the orphans, the destitute. But it says, don't tie your hand to your neck and become niggardly, but don't become a spendthrift or give out so much money till you yourself become destitute and blameworthy. So the Imam explained it in terms of Ramadan. It means give, but it also means don't give. Don't give to your stomach food and water. You're not to give. Don't indulge in sex with your husband and wife during the late daylight hours. There's a restriction on it, because you can't give indefinitely. You don't have unlimited resources, do you? No, you don't. So we find ourselves in this situation. What to do? What to do? What do we do? And we can't allow them to give all this money to Ukraine because they feel bad for the people. I feel bad for all people in war, not just them, the innocent people that are suffering. Should we only feel bad for Ukrainian innocent people and not the Palestinian people or the Syrian people or the Iraqi people or the Afghan people? Only Ukrainian people. So they're using that. They play on your passion, your compassion. That's what she was playing on. These poor people are here, and they sent them here. And now it's our obligation. But how are you going to take care of them if you can't take care of yourself? We should sacrifice for them. That's what she's saying. The one woman that was on, Christine Quinn, that used to be the city council president in New York. Okay? and the other woman, I forget her name, from Staten Island, where they have what you call the conservatives. They call it Copland. A lot of police officers live in Staten Island. Many people don't even consider Staten Island one of the boroughs of New York. It technically is. But you have to get there by ferry or bridge. And they deliberately move out there to be away from the rest of the four boroughs. That makes the fifth borough. So I see, brother, my brother wants to say something. I'm going to bring him into the queue. 314-833, I believe that's Mark Shaheed.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum to you, Imam Yusuf Ramadan. This is Mark Shaheed from the STL. Yes, sir. Alhamdulillah. Praise be to Allah. You know, I just want to make a comment in terms of support for what you just said in terms of Brother Malcolm, in terms of his influence. The main influence was the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. His father was a Garveyite, and he was murdered in a very devastating way in that regard. But it didn't have the impact for the transformation of Malcolm's life at that time, because we know what he went on to do, known as Detroit Red, Big Red, and the lifestyle he began to live that actually led to his incarceration. But his liberation from that way of life came when he met with the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You know, so like he say, you know, children want to maybe say defend their father, but the truth has to be told. And even Minister Malcolm even said that himself in that regard. And he said it on several occasions. You didn't have to read the autobiography of Malcolm to know that. He said that many, many times in regards to that. And, you know, and so we have to put things historically in context as they actually happen. And when you talk about rights, civil rights, and human rights, Malcolm took it to another level, to the highest level. As you know, Malcolm was a very, very brilliant, smart, and very astute-minded person. He knew that human rights come from God, come from Allah. Only Allah can give you the human rights. Civil rights, you know, when you talking about wanting to be able to go to the same school or sit down in the same restaurant and all that, that's not on the level of human rights. See, these are divine rights Allah give to all of his human creation. And so Malcolm knew that. So taking it, you know, to the UN and present it before the whole world in terms of the treatment, the discrimination, the prejudice, and all, you understand, that the African-American was experiencing here, that was the right thing to do. Also, in addition, as long as Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was having the peace movement, the nonviolent movement here in this country, where there was people that was being assaulted and actually losing their life, they didn't say very much in regards to that. But when he was influenced, see, this is when he was influenced. Okay, so now look at this, you understand, in Vietnam, the Vietnam War that was going on at that time. Now this man that's a leader, that's influential, it's like we tried to assassinate his character first in terms of trying to reveal, because J. Edgar Hoover, who was the head of the FBI, had both Malcolm and Martin's phone tapped. They knew what was going on, and they had many of us, you know, those of us in the Nation of Islam, you can attest to that. Our phones was tapped, and we was always informed never discuss anything or business or serious business over the phone. You just didn't do that. But
Brother
they
Mark,
saw.
I'll stop there.
But the fact of the matter is that Malcolm was influenced by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and so his transformation came from that point. And also, I'll stop there because I know you probably have other callers who want to chime in on this. But it's a good topic. Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum.
All right. 636-980.
Yes. Kareem Hamid. Assalamu alaikum. Imam Yusuf Ramadan and the AM360 audience. Yes, I'm going to be back. Listen, I want to address your initial topic where you are saying that foreign policy and domestic policy are inextricably linked together.
Yes.
Now, we have heard the adage that all politics is local,
Right.
We have seen across this country people that live in small towns, cities, whatever. They are complaining because the lack of employment, the factory shut down. It moved. Well, that complaint is a local complaint, but it is coming from international free trade. Governments in third world countries have made agreements with corporations that you can come and build your factories here and utilize the cheap labor cost and no union organizing and very few benefits, if at all. So the local economy is affected. The people are upset, but they don't know what is happening with the international free trade that caused that problem for them. So you are so correct. It is linked. It is linked. We are affected by international policies in this country, and also concerning the immigration problem. Transporting the immigrants to New York and other cities, that placed those municipalities under heavy financial strain. Now let's look at this for real. The people that left Guatemala, Venezuela, Mexico, and those areas where the immigrants are actually traveling from, they don't say, we are going to New York. We are going to Houston. We are going to Chicago. They say, no, we are going to the United States of America, seeking protection from this government. So the cost. Yes. So the cost should not be just borne by the municipality or the city that they are in, the government. They are coming to seek protection from the government. The government should help finance their condition and also address this issue of domestic homelessness that comes along with that. I'll stop right there, my brother. Thank you, Imam Yusuf Ramadan.
I appreciate that. Thank you. But it is bigger than that. It's not just the cost, you see. It's the tax, and I don't mean by financial, on the communities, the people that are coming in, the school system. They have to go to school somewhere. They're talking about fast-tracking them for making them eligible to work. Work where? What jobs are they going to get? So it's a tax. So in other words, you know, what you're saying is correct. A lot of America's foreign policy is what's causing the strife in those countries to begin with, which is making them come here. So if we can look directly at those coming from Afghanistan that we claim, that they claim helped us while we were over there, which we shouldn't have been there for no 20 years in the first place. And so now they're coming here, and you say, well, come here. We will reward you for helping us. So your foreign policy is inextricably linked to your domestic policy. Now they're saying they can't afford to bring all those people over here. The brother said the other day when he was in Vietnam, he said, in Vietnam, guess what? They don't call it the Vietnam War. They just call it the war. You understand? Mm-hmm. So we call it the Vietnam War. And that is us fighting a war over in another country that hadn't attacked America, but they use the same trick that they use against the so-called terrorists. You have to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them over here. So we have some important announcements to bring to your attention right now, and we'll come right back. You listen to New Day for Islam in America, American Muslim 360 Edition, number one Islamic radio station in the nation. Don't touch that dial. We'll be back in a while.
Family, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you, the individual you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Naila Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developmental Stages. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.
Assalamu alaikum. Join us each and every Sunday from 5 to 7 Eastern Standard Time and 4 to 6 Central Standard Time for the broadcast of the contemplations of Imam Waridduddin Muhammad, sharing his insights, his wisdom, and his knowledge here on America Muslim 360, utilize the books edited by Brother Morocco, Brother Ghani, and Brother Ronald B. Shaheed. So we look forward to your presence as we share the insight, the logic, and the thinking of our beloved Imam Waridduddin Muhammad here on America Muslim 360 on a myriad of subject matter. We look forward to your presence. Assalamu alaikum.
And we're back. 972-467, state your name and where you're calling from, please. 972-467.
Yes, assalamu alaikum. This is Ishmael Sami, Dallas,
Texas.
I just wanted to add on how foreign policy and domestic policy are, you know, they're related. They can't be separated. There's a mayor here in Dallas, and there's a big controversy. He's an African American mayor, and this is his second term as mayor, but he's quote unquote went to the Republican platform, and he ran both under the Democrat platform. And what he was saying was that during this time while he's been mayor, the policies, the crime has went down and development has increased. And he was saying that the Democrat, they weren't supporting the policies that were helping bring crime down and bring more development to the city. And he also mentioned that, you know, we use the government as a crutch. That's just a whole other subject. But we know that the private sector are doing development, and they're not just American. They're global.
Right.
And our policies of development is global in its nature. So we have people, as the man was saying prior to me, we have investors from all over the country. So their international policy is going to have a direct effect on the decisions that our local community and our local leaders make. And I just wanted to add that. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you. Alaykum assalam. So this is an article, and I see your hands raised up. I'm going to get to you in a minute, on local versus transnational, false choices for American Muslims. debates on how best navigate the engagement in America's complex and rapidly evolving political, social, cultural, religious, and economic landscape are a major preoccupation for members of the diverse American Muslim community. At the core, debates can be narrowed down to two main ideas. One, we should focus on the rights of Muslims in America and build alliances with those that share our interests without getting entangled in external or transnational issues. Two, we should engage in Muslim rights domestically while connecting them to transnational and global issues, which the U.S. is constantly involved in. While these two main ideas have numerous variations and some expressions of concern or a spectrum of opinions, the core difference, nevertheless, is that one side thinks that the engagement of the community is best served by civil rights and local focus, while the other sees it as being connected and not two separate spheres. Interestingly, the African-American community faced the same dynamics during various periods, especially in the 1960s, with the distinctive engagements of Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X in advancing the struggle for freedom and justice in the U.S. All right. Now, 862-301, state your name and where you're calling from, please. 862? All right. 972-467, state your name and where you're calling from, please.
I've spoken already, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay. All right. 706-627, state your name and where you're calling from, please.
This is Brother Muhammad from the Ummah of Prophet Muhammad, by the way, of Columbus, Georgia. Again, what you're saying, basically all of it boils down to, in a nutshell, that this is Shaitan trying to intimidate us in not establishing our share of the dunya and all these political things that go on around the world. Everybody knows that you have to separate, but we're trying to figure out how to do it in a way that pleases the people. And Allah said, no, you're supposed to be trying to separate because I commanded you to separate and you're pleasing me. When we establish a halal reality here in the United States of America, nature will take its own path. And those who want it will follow the leadership of the Quran and life of Prophet Muhammad, exemplified, inshallah, in our modeling of it and living it. And then that'll be a natural order of things. The universal reality is way above the global, international, into whatever you want to call it. And we were taught as infants that we were to follow the universal way of life created by Almighty God, Allah, and that will put us on top of the reality that everybody else is going through. He gave us another example when he said, this day I completed my favor upon the human family. You know, that you accept the best way, the final way that I have in your destiny is my human creation. Come to Al-Islam, and in that context is everything you need to know. Love for yourself, what you love for yourself, halal food, halal this. Everything is only what Allah permits. And until we understand that, and we do, we have knowledge of it, and we have understanding of it. But the wisdom is when we establish that we don't have no doubt about it, that the only way we're going to make it out of this situation, and especially our children who are come after us and grandchildren of the world, not just only of us who are Allah's servant and our responsibility to do this, then they're going to continue to be in this quagmire, you know, and Shaitan will have more time to continue to convince many more human beings to go to the hellfire with him, which Allah has guaranteed will happen, because he said hell will be full. So that's basically what I'm saying. You know, whenever we talk about anything, we have to always take it back to the Quran, the universal way of doing things, the halal way of doing things. You know, it's going to resolve all the problems that people of other nationalities, other countries are having. This is why we are the leadership of the world. We are the Khalifa. We're the ones who are responsible for the life that human beings live on this earth while we're going through this trial and error, and proving to Shaitan that he is not better than us, and we're not better than him, but he has a command. Bow down to us. It's the time of the human creation, and Allah has made that decision, and our job is to, inshallah, try to enforce it in a very diplomatic human way. But let the chips fall the way they're going to fall. Just want to say that. Thank you too much, brother.
Thank you. All right. Anyone else? All right. Is Brother raise his hand again? Yes, 706-627. You raise your hand again?
Oh, no, I thought it was stuck up there.
All right, thank you.
No, I better cut.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, the article that the brother wrote, he says, interestingly, King and Malcolm X converged toward an almost identical point of view that fused the local with the transnational and maintained that addressing the local is impossible without challenging U.S. foreign policy, militarism, and imperialism. And that's what Dr. King talked about, the three evils of militarism, poverty, militarism, materialism, racism. He talked about racism, materialism, and militarism. The convergence was summed up by King himself in the Three Evils of Society speech, which he delivered a few months before his assassination. In the early 1960s, King did not want to take on the U.S. war in Vietnam, fearing the loss of African-American middle-class and white liberal supporters needed to pass the legislation. However, after the passage of the critical legislation, it became apparent to King that the new laws are meaningless if the needed resources are not marshaled to address the effect of racism and poverty. Precisely on this point, the economic links between the local and the global helped move King's position in opposition to the Vietnam War in a more profound critique of the U.S., a critique that still stands the test of time some 50 years later. The military expenditures, the militarism that favors the arms industry, corporations, and racism at home and abroad are structurally linked, and one cannot address the local manifestation without challenging the transnational aspects of it. You see, brothers and sisters? So if you would like to, if anyone else would like to weigh in on this while we still have a few minutes left, I think this is a very important topic, as are all the topics that we broach here on AM 360. You know, we don't get an opportunity to express ourselves like this in other forums, you know. Now, I'm talking about the Muslim American community. We don't get a chance to express ourselves like this. So this is very important for us. The post-civil rights Malcolm X King period witnessed a clear orientation of African American grassroots and leadership alike, infusing their local political engagement with a constant commitment to transnational alliances. Here, the culmination of this infusion was a critical building block for the anti-apartheid and Central America solidarity movements, which benefited greatly from the dedicated work of many African-American activists and religious leaders. Let's just reflect on the major role played by Reverend Jesse Jackson in the 1970s and 1980s and his contributions in leading the Rainbow Coalition, which had a local transnational worldview and worked on the South African anti-apartheid and Central America struggles, as well as being a leading voice in domestically supporting the United Farm Workers, universal health care, and labor unions. Coming back to American Muslims and the tension between local versus transnational, that is, directly and indirectly being debated in mosques, community centers, and civil society organizations across the country. The fact that Muslims are facing a very pernicious and toxic civil rights environment and a highly Islamophobic social imaginary is a point of agreement among an overwhelming majority in the community. So we can look at the policy, which was the first thing enacted by former President Trump when he came in office. He instituted the Muslim ban, which even caused the former wife, Khadija of Muhammad Ali and his son, to have problems getting back into the country. And they're American citizens, born and raised here. You see? So you cannot, it was coming from abroad, you cannot separate the one from the other. It can't be done. It cannot be done. Domestic policy and foreign policy. So the foreign policy is that, you know, they were targeting so-called Muslim countries, so-called terrorists, right? But they also targeted Venezuela, and they weren't Muslims because they had the audacity to want to take control of their natural resources. This is what we have to be aware of, brothers and sisters. So we only have a few more minutes left. If you would like to press one on your phone, come into the queue so that we can bring you in to ask a question or make a comment. We only have a few minutes left. And we're thankful to those that did call in. And we're happy that you find this content interesting. We hope that we want to continue to give you interesting content and something for you to think about. Something for you to think about. Yes, we want to stimulate your thinking. We want to cause you to have a higher understanding, a better understanding of what we are talking about. So there's 718-806. State your name. Where are you calling from, please?
Yeah, assalamu alaikum, Brother Lassay, Queens, New York. I just want to add some arsenal from the religious side. It's from my beloved Imam Wardi Muhammad. The first Sunday I was taking notes. He said, when Allah speaks, don't question, doubt, nor hesitate. He said, obedience to Allah, he'll give you everything. The other inspiration Allah revealed to me about 8 months ago, he said, fight negativity. He'll be on your side. I just wanted to share that.
Thank you very much. Alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah.
All right. Anyone else before we go? Before we leave, press one on your phone. We got a couple of minutes, maybe 2 minutes, that we can entertain your call, your question, or your comment. All right. So we're coming near the end of the show, and we hope that, we brought you some stimulating content. We hope that this comment was stimulating for you. Okay, somebody came back into the queue. Okay. No. Okay, let's see. All right, we keep coming near the end of the show. We maybe have 1 minute left. 1 minute. 60 seconds, and we can engage you if you would like to ask a question or make a comment. All right. So, yes, I thought this was a very interesting article, interesting take on this subject matter, the local versus the transnational. And it becomes a major point of demarcation and a source of internal disputations on the one hand, and on the other hand, a source of external exploitation by government agencies and interest groups that seek to advance their agenda through a well-controlled engagement with selected members of the American Muslim community. Very important point. Selected members. Don't allow them to use you, brothers and sisters. Don't allow people to use you. You know, they reached out. And they say, oh, we want to give you, Brother Imam, we want to give you an all-expense-paid trip to Israel. And why would you want to do that? You want to give me an all-expense-paid trip. They said, well, this is in the interest of peace. Don't allow people to use you. Don't allow anybody to use you, your likeness. I've taken pictures with some leaders before, and I told them, do not use this picture without checking with us first, because they'll use that picture, as I see some people doing now. A brother in this community, he shared a picture of himself sitting next to Imam Wardi Muhammad, and underneath it he wrote that he was with Imam Dirt and he's being surrounded by supporters. making it seem like those people that were supporting the imam were supporting him and are supporting him. And that's not true. Okay? And that is not true. So we're coming to the end of the show. We thank you for listening. We appreciate you for calling in. Asking your questions or making your comments. We look forward to being with you again soon, inshallah, next week. We pray that you have a blessed Jummah. Stay safe and keep Allah first. So until next time, assalamu alaikum.